My friend's grandfather, she's here, but her grandfather's in Italy and he's fucking 98 and he used to smoke like a pack a day. He's still alive. So I feel like I'm missing something here because I just don't get it. I know genetics,
Yeah.
sure. I don't know what it is. The Mediterranean diet.
We should get a dietitian on the
Oh my God,
podcast.
yes, that'd be so fun.
I'm sure it would end up with us being like, "What? What?" You know, all the time, be like, "What the fuck? I had no idea." The oil, and like changing our lives after for like a day.
Oh my God, I should. Should we do that?
Maybe.
Yeah, we should.
Could be
Okay.
fun. I'm sure we would be so confused.
I would be shocked every 2 minutes.
Yeah, I can see it.
Hey everyone, welcome back.
Hey guys, we hope you're doing well. We have a fun topic, I think, for today, which is group dynamics.
Yes, or group psychology, same thing.
Yeah, so this is a huge topic, and there is so much literature on this, and there's so many people who have theories on it from every possible field that you can imagine. And we are gonna stick to our niche.
Yes, we are.
We're gonna stick to one of the important works of Freud, again, like everything, which is called Group Psychology and the Analysis of the Ego. And it's a book he wrote in 1921, or that was published in 1921. And we're just going to work from that today, just to not make the subject broader than it already is.
Yeah, I think I might bring in like some pop psychology terms, but I'm not gonna go with anyone else's like real
Some
theory.
little BuzzFeed
Yeah,
input.
exactly.
So I read on
Some fun
Instagram.
phrases.
Yeah, sure.
Just yeah,
And
but it's gonna
sure.
be psychoanalytic, I think mostly.
It's a cool topic, I think, because it's really applicable to everyday life, because basically everything from three people and onwards can be considered a group. So really, in everyday life, whether it's with people you know or with people you don't know in a supermarket, like you always find yourself in a group or in a mass, in a
Yeah,
crowd,
definitely. And
etc.
I think that is like one of the most interesting points about group psychology or group dynamics is that you don't even really understand what groups you're in. All the groups that you could actually identify with are not things that you would think of.
And I think, again, if you know a few things about how groups work or why they work the way they do, it's so cool because you can like see it when you're in it. Basically, this book that Freud wrote is all evolving around one big question that he asked himself. And that question is, why does an individual behave differently in a group than when they're alone? Like, that's a question he asked himself, and that's something that we can observe all the time. Like every single person behaves differently in a group than to when they're alone, which is totally normal. And maybe you wouldn't think that way because maybe it's not super obvious, but it is. We are different in groups than to when we're alone. And Freud basically explained a few characteristics that a group has, a few phenomena that he like observes or that he studied. But it's important to note that Freud was not the first one to study group dynamics, and he actually refers a lot to other psychologists or sociologists, etc., that came before him and wrote stuff on that. Just to make that clear, he shows their theories and he kind of elaborated on them.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know, I was trying to think of like the main point of groups, and I think the main point of groups is that a group has its own mind. So it sounds like some kind of sci-fi situation, but basically, when you become a part of your group, the whole group is almost like a one functional person.
Yeah, true. And Freud also claimed that groups are mainly controlled by the unconscious. So that's a concept that we know, but for some reason, in a group, kind of like the unconscious is even stronger and more dominant. And this also explains one of the most important characteristics that Freud points out, which I think is so interesting and something you can really see. He says that what happens in a group is that the intellectual level decreases and the affects increase. So the emotions increase, especially negative emotions, but also other ones, but especially like aggression, anger, etc.
What I think about right away is sports.
Right.
And when you see like a crowd, when you're watching any sport, it's like this huge group of a bunch of like animals, basically. Mm-hmm. They don't have any intellectual capacity. People are out of control. It's like all based on emotions. It's pretty dangerous. And this group isn't made up of idiots. It's made up of completely normal people who are even respectable people when they're outside the group. It's just as soon as you enter this group, you completely lose your individuality.
Exactly. You know what I always immediately think of is parties or being drunk.
Yeah, parties too.
Or not even being like wasted, shit-faced that you cannot talk, but just when you're at the pre-drinks and it's fun. But for some reason, there is a vibe that you just get so like into it. And it's, I don't know, I also notice it in myself. I become like so dumb. Like my humor becomes totally so dumb and like it's just fun. And you just, there's a certain contagion in the group, which is another characteristic that Freud describes. It's like he says that within a group, it's easier to believe something than when you're alone. When you're alone, you tend to be more skeptical. The group allows for emotions and ideas and attitudes to pass on easily in a group. And that's a contagious effect. And I think that goes yes. hand in hand with what we said before. Like when you're in a group of people, I think of my guy friends that I really love especially, but with them it's just even more visible. And individually, they're all so like motivated and successful and smart and really like sophisticated and stuff. But in a group, you're really like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, are totally. We like 14 years old and like the dumbest totally. Jokes and everyone is like, but it's fun, but it's so interesting to observe.
I mean, look at spring break.
It's like I want to go.
The worst.
I would love to go.
The
to
worst. The worst group dynamics. The worst, like, proof of how the intellectual capacity of people just disappears.
Yeah.
It's just like thousands of wasted idiots. I'm sorry if anybody's been on spring break. It's not you. It's the group. It's literally not you. It's not your fault.
Yeah, and also it can be really fun when you're part of the group. Like,
yeah, of course.
The contagion is great. But also coming to that, another thing that Freud points out is that there is a different sort of moral conscience within a group. So there's a higher variability in moral behavior within a group. So it's not necessarily that we become immoral in a group, but there's just more variability. So in larger groups, we tend to do more extremely good things or extremely bad mm-hmm. things. For example, talking about bad things, even hooligans and stuff like that. That's like really heightened bad behavior. The contagion is there. But also, when people get together, they can also achieve extraordinarily good things. Is something you also see, you know, when, I don't know, natural catastrophes happen and then like all the people get together and help each other out and stuff. That's also on the other side. That's something that's especially good.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just a different way of moral conscience than to when you're alone.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the interesting thing about groups is that although there is this collective mind and this idea that we all lose our ability to think for ourselves and to be individuals, there has to be a group leader. And what Freud said is that this leader is put in the place of an ego ideal. And the members of the group, they all kind of identify with each other because they have this shared ego ideal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very obvious for groups where there is, you know, a leader.
Yeah.
But that confuses me when I think about other groups, because the leader, I think, often has no idea that they are the leader.
Do you think?
And the members of the group don't even mm-hmm. know who the leader is, you know? It's just that person who, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, but I think for differentiation, we need to make clear that I think this is the way I understood it.
Mm-hmm.
Freud also differentiates between like a group where there is a leader. This would also, for example, be, I don't know, professionally, a section in the army where there's like mm-hmm. a higher ranking person, you know, there's an mm-hmm. obvious leader there. Maybe some leaders are less obvious, but also there's something called a spontaneous group. Like this is, for example,
the libidinal.
Yes, exactly. So a spontaneous group might more be like a mass.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, at a rave.
which or actually
the,
makes...
Or do you think that the DJ is then the leader?
No, so like I would actually disagree, and I feel like there is mm-hmm. always somebody who is somehow in a leading position.
Mm-hmm.
Because even if you have like a group of hooligans, there's like one that's really encouraging everyone else, you know, like somebody has to start.
True.
Someone has to start it. Yeah. Somebody has to set everyone else off. But I don't think they're, you know, appointed as a leader or even know that they're the leader.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's true. The second group, the libidinal sexual instinct, which supplies the energy that holds the group together. It sounds really ridiculous. But I think it's such a good way of explaining what holds this group together, because it is so irrational and it is so full of excitement, which to me, excitement is sexual energy.
Yeah. So what Freud says in that sense is that many groups are held together by certain libidinal ties. So there is a certain sexual energy, which doesn't necessarily translate to really love relationships, but also in a wider spread way, just emotional relationships in general. And mm-hmm. that kind of influences this wish that every single member has this need to be in accordance with the group versus in opposition to it. And I think that's something we can all relate to. Like, you always want to be the part of a group. You know what I mean? You never want to be excluded. And he says that, again, in like a spontaneous mass or in a spontaneous group, so not like friends or something, but something where you just like slip in everyday life, I don't know. It's maybe hard to understand that there's not necessarily libidinal ties within that group observable. But then he says, it is a group where there's potential for the development of these libidinal ties. And again, that's why you want to be a part of it.
Exactly. And also, just to be devil's advocate, not really devil's advocate, but group psychology, I think, is basically exactly like love. It's like the same thing that you go through in a group as opposed to when you're in love with somebody. And I found like a few common things between the two. So there's this magical suggestibility, which is something I'm very familiar with.
What does that mean?
Like words and things, when you're in a group, sometimes they just, or oftentimes they just have some kind of magic about them. Like mm-hmm. you think that they're way more meaningful than they are.
Right.
And that reminds me of a lot of my relationship. People said some stupid shit to me and I was like, oh my God, that was so like that was so special. I can't believe he sent that to me. Or it's like, he really thinks that I'm unique. Yeah. But
you're like, yeah, moving on.
But these are really things when you're in love, like you don't understand that these are just regular phrases. It's the same thing in groups. Like you think that things mean much more than they do. But yeah, another one is like overvaluation of the object, which, yes, we always admire our leaders and think that they're more valuable than they are. Suspension of reality testing and judgment. Obviously something that happens both when I'm in a relationship or in a group.
Which again comes back to this phenomenon that just the intellect decreases.
Totally.
So your judgment decreases and instead your emotions are heightened, which is definitely something that happens when you're in love.
Yeah, totally. And then there's an interesting one, which I would say is not for everybody who's in love, but definitely me, wish to be led. So I do think that when you're in love, you, maybe not everyone, but a lot of people do wish that somebody will kind of take on a, let's say, motherly or fatherly
right.
role. So that's definitely an interesting one. So the next one is pretty similar to what I said before. It's like disregard for what's rational or logical. And then the last one is also what we talked about before. So the desire for extremes. And that is definitely found in both groups and love.
Interesting. I had never thought about these similarities, but a lot of them, yeah, I can also relate to. We've mentioned it before, and you mentioned it again now. Something else that's a very observable characteristic in groups is that there's a certain feeling of power in a group, and it is also because we are more anonymous within a group. Yeah, the individual is just more anonymous in a group, which kind of decreases your sense of responsibility. So you are more likely to display stronger feelings in whatever way to when you're alone, because there's like kind of less chance of people seeing you in that sense, and you're part of a group. And Freud actually says that this is an expression of the unconscious, which is usually more repressed. And within a group, that's also why he says that the group is mainly controlled by the unconscious. It's like, to me, it almost sounds like as an individual in everyday life, you're so repressed and you have to so like conform to societal norms, and just your super ego is also so intact in everyday life. And in a group, it kind of like loosens up a bit, you know? It's like, okay, my unconscious can come out a little bit more, which again reminds me of those like drunk groups and stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And this scared the shit out of me because there was this question when I was reading like some psychoanalytic stuff about groups, and there's this question that keeps coming up is like, how can a single man acquire an unquestioned rule over millions? And I was just like, okay, that I'm not a fan of. It's like you're supposed to use psychoanalysis to like treat people, you know, to come up with some theories, some things to better society. But I don't think it's smart to teach people how to become dictators.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a bit creepy.
It's very creepy. So it says like the leader is the key to the psychoanalytic comprehension of regressive behavior. Leaders appeal and they capture irrational needs, desires, and fears of the group, which we know. And this phrase, for some reason, really freaked me out. So the leader is the unconscious heir to the mantle of the primal father. He inherits his absolute power and unquestioned authority, and his followers, the sons, are as a group incapable of rational criticism and independent judgment in matters concerning the leader's will. The group hungers for the approval of the leader and carries out his absolute commands without regard to any personal moral judgments. And this directly relates to something that Freud wrote about too. And the group is in a waking state of hypnosis. That is terrifying.
That is terrifying. It's super creepy. It sounds like a sect or something, but it is, yeah, I guess it is something you can observe in sects and religion very often and stuff like that. Groups can, they have like the power to bring out something so primitive in all of us where you really just like blindly follow a leader. Isn't there like even a song? Like, oh my God. I don't know. Don't ask me why, but I remember there's a song. I don't know in which context it was sung. It's like follow the leader, leader,
Oh,
leader.
yeah.
Isn't it like a church song even? Dude, that's a fucking
Oh my
creep.
God,
Right?
yes.
Dude, that's so fucking
What is, I
creepy.
think it's like wherever he may go or something,
What the fuck is
I will
that
follow him.
about?
Something?
Follow the leader. Yeah.
No,
I know that's one. No, I know this one.
Okay.
This is a
The one that
song.
I know is like, I will follow him. Or something, and
Again,
it's like
two, three, four.
wherever he may go.
My God, that's fucking terrifying. You know what I think of? It's also in German, we call them Lemminge, those animals that like jump off the cliff just because the leader of the herd jumps off.
What?
I don't even know where they live. Is it like a, it's
In the
like a,
Sahara?
but where there's no cliff in the Sahara, like, or I don't know where they go, but the Lemminge in German. I
Okay,
will
I'm
research
not
it.
sure.
It's like a herd It's like little, yeah, that kind of like chipmunks, but bigger.
Okay, yeah, yeah. And then it's they all go. Is it the weasel?
It's a different sort of a weasel. I think it looks like a weasel and a guinea pig. They're known for their like extreme like group behavior, basically. And then if the leader jumps off the cliff, they all like commit suicide and just fall and die.
Oh my god, that's horrible.
It is. That's group dynamics in that sense.
That's so weird. But
it's so interesting because there's also all these reports. I remember once there was a report about like a car crash in a tunnel somewhere in Austria. This is like at least 15 years ago, but I remember it vividly because we talked about it in school back then. There was like a huge car crash in a tunnel in Austria and there was fire. And like basically a bunch of people, you could like go upstairs somewhere. Don't ask me how, but they wanted to get out of the tunnel and they went upstairs. And like, so I think 2/3 of the people went upstairs just following the first few who walked that way. But they didn't realize that the smoke goes up and the doors were locked. So all those people up there died. And the few of them that kind of didn't just follow the group, but followed their, like, you know, their sense of intuition and knowledge and et cetera, that went the other way, they survived. Like, isn't that the fucking craziest thing? And I think it's so easy retrospectively to be like, yeah, but of course it makes so much sense. But we all know how strong a group dynamic can be. From also not as extreme examples, but you always like, they do these experiments. I read about it like 2 days ago that in a doctor's office, they just made this experiment where like 3 people stood up and those 3 people were part of the experiment and like 10 other people also stood up without knowing why.
Yeah, it's really fucking weird. Another thing that I was reading about, which I think is fascinating because people are obsessed with group work.
Yeah.
So this person questioned like the practice of brainstorming. And it sounds really great in theory. So this group kind of gathers as many ideas as possible together without censoring them. And after they gather these ideas, they kind of get rid of the ones that aren't as great and they come out with the best ones. But researchers found that when this happens, when groups get together and brainstorm, there's just one charismatic individual who takes over. So there's basically one person who controls the group and they're his ideas. So this whole idea that we have of brainstorming and people working well together or coming up with better ideas together is kind of bullshit. And it also said something really interesting. It said that you can't come up with like a truly innovative idea if you're in a group because innovation is radical. So like a good idea or something different is going to be discovered by one person,
right?
Not a group.
So that also means that if you understand how groups work, you can really, really use it to your advantage.
Yeah, and the scary thing, I think, is that radical ideas are always questioned by the group and often like really not liked by the group.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's even the opposite. Like if you're in a group, it basically stops innovation or like progress.
Interesting, because it's so contradicting to what we always think
innovation
is and teamwork and
all that. And that makes sense when we think about history. It's always been like one odd person who came up with something. It's never been like a group of people.
I think it's also funny to share that we, in our studies to become psychoanalysts, a big part of our university experience is going to group therapy.
Exactly.
Which I think is something when you hear group therapy, it's kind of so random. You're like, why do I go to group therapy and what do you do there? Like, it's just, you know, it's a random concept. But for me, I don't know about you, but for me, the group therapies that we've had have been like one of the coolest experiences in my university
life,
because it's just, it is so random and it is such a different environment to even seeing those people. And those were people from our class that we saw like every day or most days. But for some reason, a group setting is just so different.
It is.
And it was so interesting how so many unconscious like thoughts came up in that group that were expressed and like relationships that were like kind of played out within the group. And I remember there were fights in the group and it was just so random.
So like, I think the craziest thing about those groups is what we learned much later. The crazy thing is that we weren't told anything really.
Yeah.
And then, of course, much later, when we got more into our education, we learned that these groups, they reflect society. So this small group that you're in university with your classmates, you think it's just you and your classmates, but it's actually on a larger scale. It's a reflection of society, and it's also a reflection of how we function in all the other groups in our life.
Which is also why when you are a patient going to psychotherapy, sometimes the therapist will ask you if you are also willing to go to a group therapy, like in the first interview. And what we've learned is that, first of all, most patients are really suspicious of that and they're like, what are you doing in a group therapy again? But what we've learned is that it's especially good for people who struggle in their work environment, in their mm-hmm. social circle, maybe even in their family. It's really good to bring that into a group setting because those relationships will kind of be reenacted within the group. And it sounds really bizarre, but it really works. Because again, as you say, it kind of reflects your environment that you have in a group. So we always say, like, when you tend to have more problems within a social context, a group therapy mm-hmm. is excellent.
And it's really shocking. You don't realize how intense it is until you're in it, but it's really shocking to see that the way that the people behave in the group have nothing to do with the context of the group.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost scary because it's like this collection of people who are all acting out and taking out totally separate things on this poor group. But yeah, I think it's important thing to do. I wish everybody did it.
I think,
like, I really think that all the time. I really wish that everybody could try it. Or
same, I wish everyone had the chance to go to a group therapy even like 3, 4, 5 times just to experience it, because it really is not comparable to an individual therapy or
no,
to any
not
sort
at all.
Of setting that you have in, not even to like a supervision you may have at work or something. It's just really not comparable, and I can't even explain why. It's just a different vibe, as dumb as that sounds. No, it really is. Oh my God, remember when I was viciously like attacked in a group therapy? And again, I was like, what is this? This is not about me. Like, it was someone else.
Oh my God,
and
yeah.
I know you've had the same experience. And also I attacked someone in a group therapy and stuff. And just there's a certain side of you that comes out, which again comes back to what Freud said. It's just that the group is controlled by the unconscious. And like,
yeah,
because you're more anonymous, for some reason, I feel like you're more courageous very often in a group. Even though that first step may take a while because
yeah.
you feel observed and you feel watched and judged, but once you get over it, it's a really good feeling to like bring something into the group.
I don't know though, I think like that's something that definitely happened with me or you, but there are those people in the group who never say a word.
True.
Ever.
True, but also we've learned in that setting, it doesn't matter if it's a group therapy or an individual therapy, with psychotherapy in general, the more you put in, the more you get out.
Definitely.
So if you never put anything...
And silence is not meaningless.
All psychoanalysts ever and everyone else like, oh my God, shut up. We're like, silence means something. But yeah,
oh
I think it's always like whatever you put in and whatever you... like if you're willing to put in some work, and that doesn't mean you should like blindly attack people in a group.
You know what the funniest thing is to me, talking about silence, is like at least our therapist, like he's always talking about how different silences mean different things.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm just like, what absolute fucking bullshit. Like, you're behind me. You don't see my face. I'm not speaking. How do you know which silence I'm doing? I'm just like, because he always acts like he knows.
Right.
And he's like, yes, I know what this was.
Yeah.
This was you seem like you're suffering.
Dude, honestly, I feel like sometimes I feel like being a therapist is like the coolest job ever, because this is going to sound so wrong, but if you, this is just how I imagine our analyst, like when he just really doesn't know, maybe he didn't pay attention 3 minutes before, and then he could just like throw in a yes. sentence like that, you know, and chances are high that yes. you will find something within that being like, you know what, you're right, or that reminds me of, you know, like yeah. you can always say like, it sounds like you're suffering, like,
oh my God, yeah, you. Actually, I was on a date, and this guy told me about a really interesting, it was like a really old study that they did with people, and there was basically like a computer system, mm-hmm. and they sent people into this room, I have to find it, but they sent people into this room, and the computer system basically just like rephrased what they said as a question mm-hmm. every time they talked. Mm-hmm. So they were like, yeah, I'm really struggling with school. And then the computer system would say like, oh, you're struggling with school? And these people said that like they got so much out of it. Mm-hmm. And it was so like important for them. And that they wanted to go back. And I was like, what the hell?
Dude, I can really imagine that. I can totally see that.
And it was nothing but rephrasing yeah. as questions.
Yeah, that's so
funny. So funny.
Okay, well, coming to the end of it, let's like quickly summarize. Yeah. We talked about Freud's book, Group Psychology and the Analysis of the Ego, which I think is something really, I would really recommend it to anyone yeah, who's listening.
Yeah, definitely.
And who's interested in groups. It's also not a big book. It's not huge. And he talks about why individuals behave differently in groups than when they're alone. And he mentions a few things, like there is suggestibility within the group, there is a higher variability in moral conscience, there's a feeling of power, more mm-hmm. anonymity, and especially, which I think you guys should start to observe, that the intellectual level decreases and the Definitely. Effect increases. And this was just, I think, a little sneak peek of like group dynamics.
Yeah, and if you're not a fan of Freud, I have good news for you. And he's dead, but this is actually not his theory. So he took this collective mind from a man named Le Bon.
Again, please, with a nice French accent. Le Bon.
I don't know, or is it like Le Bon?
Le Bon.
Okay, Le so bon. Anyways. So yeah, this collective mind, this idea, it comes from someone else. It's not Freud. Now this stupid noise is coming back. But yeah, if you want to read more into the collective mind, then you should look up this guy if you don't feel like reading the group psychology book.
Yeah. Thank you guys for listening to this podcast. We hope you enjoyed the topic, and we hope you can use it in your everyday life.
Yes.
And maybe see especially some interesting things.
Especially, I really would recommend reading this if you work like in any corporate job. Seriously, look into it.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you guys for listening. Bye.